Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
Life, liberty, what does this mean? The Northern Illinois District Life Task Force invites you to the 4th Annual Life and Liberty Lecture so you can hear more and make the bold confession of Christ and Him crucified for the life of the world. Featured presenters are Issues Etc. guests Dr. Alan Carlson and Katie Faust. Saturday, October 30th, Bethany Lutheran Church, Naperville, Illinois. Find out more and register at nidlcms.org/life.
Critical race theory is not a justice enterprise. It's just another oppression enterprise flipped on its head in answering of one claim of injustice with another attempt at injustice to even the scales.
Separation of church and state, which is now ensconced in our Constitution, that's a very American idea, an Enlightenment idea. But it's not a Lutheran idea per se. The distinction is absolutely there.
My children will know and grandchildren will know that I subscribe to the Book of Concord and confessing it with my whole heart. I will stand in front of Christ with what I believe, teach, and confess based on the Bible.
Our faith is not in our faith. Our faith is in Jesus. And the strength of our faith completely depends on the strength of the object of our faith.
Thank you for providing theology for clerical collar, white collar, and blue collar.
The headline for the Religion News Service op-ed reads, "It's time to end the Catholic Church's abortion culture wars." Well, the op-ed says, in essence, that Catholic bishops who object to prominent pro-choice Catholic politicians' view of abortion should stand down. They should be quiet for the sake of the church, for the sake of their own reputation. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Friday afternoon, October the 22nd. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be responding to this Religion News Service op-ed with Stephen White of the Ethics and Public Policy Center for the first few minutes of the program. We'll spend some time with Joy Pullman of The Federalist discussing two issues, the Biden administration's health policies and the left's control of public schools. Joshua Pauling kicks off day one of Issues Etc. Reformation Week today. His story from evangelicalism and Calvinism to Lutheranism. Then we're going to play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. You can wait and vote by giving us a call, 1-877-623-MYIE, or you can vote in advance at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc, via Twitter at issuesetc, or send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org. Joining us to discuss a Religion News Service op-ed titled "It's Time to End the Catholic Church's Abortion Culture Wars," Stephen White, fellow in the Catholic Studies Program at the Ethics and Public Policy Center and author of the book Red, White, Blue, and Catholic. Stephen, welcome.
Todd, it's great to be here with you.
John Gehring has written this op-ed for Religion News Service, "It's Time to End the Catholic Church's Abortion Culture Wars," in which he argues that vocal Catholic bishops should stop pressing the point of pro-choice Catholic politicians' disagreement with the church on abortion. What's your reaction?
Well, it's interesting to me that someone who is the head of an organization like Faith and Public Life would want the church to remain silent on the most pressing and important civil rights issue of the day, defense of unborn human life in the womb. The idea that the culture wars in which we find ourselves, the arguments of abortion, are something that the Catholic Church has chosen to wage rather than the response of the church, and not just the Catholic Church, but Christian churches and other religious denominations, a response on the part of people who would defend life to a culture that has gotten progressively more and more antagonistic towards life. So this isn't a war that Catholic bishops started. It's not a culture war that they chose, and it's not one that they can remain silent on.
What has Pope Francis had to say on the matter?
Pope Francis has spoken pretty clearly that he sees abortion as murder. That's the word he's used repeatedly. He says paying for abortions, as an example of a government paying for abortions, is like hiring a hitman. So the metaphors that he's chosen to speak about this are sort of pretty clear. The church's position on abortion is not ambiguous. There's not a lot of wiggle room for arguing that this is something that's legitimate or something that can be defended. At the same time, Pope Francis has always insisted, and Catholic bishops here in the United States have always insisted, that the defense of human life has to be done with compassion, especially for women who face unwanted pregnancies. And the truth about the dignity of human life has to be presented in a way that doesn't fall into anger and resentment. So it's a stern message. It's a strong message. It's a clear message in defense of all human life. But it has to be a message that's presented with love and with care. And the bishops in the United States strive to do that. A lot of people don't like to give them the credit they deserve for speaking with compassion. As we see in this conversation we're having right now, there's a lot of people who take any objection from the Catholic Church or anyone else on the issue of abortion to be waging a culture war or some kind of aggression against women or something like that. But the Church will continue to stand up for life and continue to strive to do so in a way that upholds the dignity of the unborn life, but also helps those women who face these challenges.
Should the Pope's audience reception of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, one of the politicians in question here, should that be seen as a stamp of approval on her views on abortion?
No, not at all. The Pope, like any head of state, meets with lots of other dignitaries. So the fact that he would meet with her, I don't think should be taken as an endorsement at all of her position on these issues. It's not the first time that Nancy Pelosi's met with a Pope, and it's not at all out of the ordinary that someone of her stature and standing would be given an audience with the Holy Father.
I have interviewed both Cardinal Raymond Burke and Archbishop Charles Chaput on this subject, and both were extremely clear that pro-choice Catholics in general should not present themselves to receive the Eucharist. Is this in any way a novel practice?
No, it's not. One of the things that is sort of novel, and by novel in the last couple decades, I think, is this idea that not presenting oneself for communion, or being asked, in an extreme case, not to present yourself to communion, is somehow a punishment, as if the Church's sacramental discipline is an act of aggression against some politician who's gotten out of line. And that's not a helpful way to understand it. The Church has always insisted that communion should be received only worthily, and someone who consistently, persistently, obstinately takes a position that is in grave opposition to the Church's teaching is caused damage to the communion between them and the rest of the body of Christ, and that to present themselves for communion in that situation would not only be harmful to themselves, but would cause scandal to the rest of the community. It's not a punishment. It's a medicinal remedy, and one that should only be used in rare and extreme sort of exceptional cases. When we're talking about politicians who spent decades, more and more aggressively promoting the abortion license in this country, this isn't a one-off. This isn't a first resort. Someone like Joe Biden has spent 40 years or more dialoguing with bishops and priests on this, and over those 40 years, he's become sort of farther and farther away from the Church's insistence on the defense of human life and the protection of human life in law, and he's gotten farther and farther away from it. So this isn't something that the Catholic Church is sort of springing on people suddenly. This is part of an ongoing conversation that's decades old, and that dialogue at some point has to produce a result. So the bishops right now are talking about this a lot. Some bishops have already said that that President Biden shouldn't present himself for communion. But again, that's not a one-off. That's not a new teaching. It's not a new policy. It's the result of 40 years of dialogue and conversation, and fruitless dialogue, unfortunately. The president's gotten worse on this issue, not better, over the years.
What do you make of the phrase weaponizing the Eucharist? That's one that's become popular among those who object to bishops being vocal on this.
Yeah, it's a tricky phrase because the Eucharist can be weaponized. The sacraments shouldn't become political tools. So those who would defend President Biden's position on abortion, for example, have a strong incentive to turn this into an issue of political weaponization of the Eucharist, right? They have a strong incentive to make this look like the bishops are using the Eucharist as a weapon, rather than doing what good fathers and pastors ought to do, which is to say to their flock, out of love, you have separated yourself from communion. You need to get right before you present yourself to the table for your sake and for the sake of the rest of the flock. That's not using the sacraments as a weapon. That's acting as a true pastor. That's something that's said not out of hatred or of anger, but out of love for someone who is in a serious situation, who is drifting farther and farther away from the Church, and who the pastor wants to bring back. It's medicine. It's strong medicine, but it is a medicinal approach, not a weapon. And the idea that bishops would use this as a weapon is something of a red herring. You hear it a lot, but I can't think of a single bishop in the United States in my lifetime who's used it as a weapon.
Gehring's op-ed says that Catholic bishops, the ones in question, have a reputation as Republican partisans. Is this true?
Some people think they have that reputation. I know John Gehring a little bit. He spent many years trying to convince people that this is precisely the case. It's easier for a lot of Catholics to say the bishops are being partisan rather than to grapple with the arguments that the bishops and the rest of the church are actually making on this issue. It's a get-out-of-jail-free card, right? If the bishops are being partisan, then we don't have to listen to them. If the bishops are being partisan, that means they're being unreasonable. But the fact is that the church didn't decide to defend human life because it's inconvenient for Democrats, right? Just like the Catholic Church doesn't defend immigrants because it's inconvenient for Republicans. The church defends life because that's what the gospel demands of us. And if that's inconvenient for politicians who've built their career on supporting the abortion lobby, that's not the church's fault. That's the politician's fault. As I said earlier, this culture war we're in, if you want to call it that, this situation where abortion has poisoned our politics, destroyed families, torn apart the church, caused division in the church, and let's not forget, cost 60-plus million lives since Roe v. Wade, that's not the fault of bishops. That's not the fault of defenders of life in the womb. That's not the fault of Catholic churches and other churches who stand up to defend these rights. The fault for that lies elsewhere.
Gehring writes, denying politicians communion, comparing them to segregationists, and even questioning their right to call themselves Catholic are signs of desperation from religious leaders who have lost the ability to change minds and hearts. How do you respond to that?
It's just odd to me that someone would sooner defend the abortion license and the abortion industry in this country and the destruction that it's caused in our society and in the Catholic Church, would sooner defend that than acknowledge the importance of standing up for innocent life. There's an inversion and a perversion to these sorts of arguments that's striking. It's not new. It's unsettling. But it's also something that I think those who would see life defended need to take in stride. It's one thing to enter into dialogue, to converse and argue about these issues, and hopefully those conversations and arguments happen in good faith. But we shouldn't be surprised when they don't happen in good faith, and when the people, our interlocutors or those we're arguing with, present a version of our own position that's unrecognizable to us. We'd be naive to assume that we'll always have the truth of the gospel represented fairly, and we should be prepared for that. So the idea that it's somehow unchristian or un-Catholic to challenge the abortion status quo in this country is a bit astonishing to hear or to read in print, but the church needs to be prepared to have an answer for that. We defend life in all stages, and particularly those who are most vulnerable and can't stand up for themselves, including those unborn children in the womb.
Gehring also cites a poll showing that 61% of Americans, including 56% of American Catholics, want abortion to remain legal in some sense. Does that matter?
No, in one sense. In one sense, it does matter because it reflects poorly on the church's ability to catechize and convince its own members. In another sense, it doesn't matter. A majority of Catholics can't be bothered to go to Mass on a Sunday. That doesn't mean that the church should change its teaching about keeping the Sabbath holy. The fact that we fail in our religious or moral obligations or duties is not proof that our duties are otherwise, right? It's a troubling statistic. It's an unfortunate statistic, but it doesn't change the truth of the fact that human life deserves to be protected and that the church is bound, morally bound, to stand up for those who can't defend themselves.
Does the objection of Catholic bishops to pro-choice Catholics and their views, does it harm the witness of the church?
No. In fact, it would be appalling for the witness of the church if the bishops were to decide that we will defend those causes and speak up for those who it's popular to defend. If the church decides that it's not in our interests, that it's sort of bad for our image to stand up for innocent life, that would be utterly disastrous for the witness of the church. The gospel needs to be proclaimed. The dignity of human life has to be proclaimed and protected, even when, perhaps especially when, that's unpopular. So I think that if people knew that the church would only defend those who it's popular to defend, the gospel wouldn't be worth very much.
Stephen White is a fellow in the Catholic Studies program at the Ethics and Public Policy Center and author of the book Red, White, Blue, and Catholic. You'll find a link to the Ethics and Public Policy Center at issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Stephen, thank you.
My pleasure.
Joy Pullman of The Federalist will be with us after the break. We're going to talk about two issues, the Biden administration's health policies and the left's control of public schools. Thanks to our beloved on-demand listeners, Issues Etc. consistently ranks among the top podcasts in religion and spirituality. You can help us climb the charts by subscribing, rating, and reviewing Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit the subscription button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for podcast listeners to find Issues Etc. Help us cast Christ's net on the internet. Subscribe, rate, and review Issues Etc. today.
Life, liberty, what does this mean? The Northern Illinois District Life Task Force invites you to the 4th Annual Life and Liberty Lecture so you can hear more and make the bold confession of Christ and Him crucified for the life of the world. Featured presenters are Issues Etc. guests Dr. Alan Carlson and Katie Faust. Saturday, October 30th, Bethany Lutheran Church, Naperville, Illinois. Find out more and register at nidlcms.org/life.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Truth, freedom, and vocation are the pillars of a Concordia University Chicago education. Through them, we form our students for lives of influence and service for the common good. This is the education American society needs right now. I'm Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia Chicago, and I invite you to visit us to discover what it means for truth, freedom, and vocation to become the pillars of your future. Learn more at cuchicago.edu.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR21. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.